I'm just curious.
Okay, so before we get started, I'm taking a dad moment privilege. I just got a text message from Molly, who plays at Boston University tonight. She said, we just did a team bonding where we had to talk about the best and worst moments in our lives. I couldn't narrow down the best, and I couldn't narrow down the worst. Meanwhile, all my teammates are sobbing about some serious stuff that's happened to them in their lives, and I realized how great mine is. Now, if that doesn't make your day, nothing will.
Good on you, Dad.
Oh, no, she's a good kid. Thank God she takes after her mom. All right, so I... That's exactly right. I outkicked my coverage when it came to matrimony. Call us to order if we're doing this as a formal meeting. You're recording right now?
I'm recording.
Okay, so we're recording for all posterity. So when we were talking about how we wanted to go through the process, knowing that two of the three of us sitting up here are different than the three of us that were sitting up here last year at this time, we decided it was in our best interest to really try to take a step backwards and go through what we're referring to as a budget 101 and just try to build on where we've been, where we are, and where we hope together to try to go. So with that, Lisa, get us going.
Well, typically this meeting is basically an overview of the budget that is represented, where we're at with the request as it stands, what the budget book looks like aesthetically, and how to read it, which is all things that I will gladly cover. But I really thought it was probably worthwhile to talk about county budgeting itself and what we do and why we do it, what we do it. Probably not a lot of information that you don't already somewhat know, but I think some of it might be valuable. I put together this budget 101 and talked about which code sections that the Board of Supervisors budget is covered in, and I did not provide you with that, those code sections, because I think we're all capable of looking them up if we need to or want to. I have a copy here. When we put a budget together, the tax rates are expressed in dollars and cents per thousand evaluation. The evaluation report was completed on December 21st. So the evaluations that I have, hopefully, are the last evaluation. That's not necessarily always the case. There are some changes that sometimes can occur in those based on
PAB rulings.
Yes.
Minor change. We had an addition of some utility lines come in this week. So nothing, if there was anything earth shattering, we would do a new valuation report. That's very rare. We don't like to do that,
right?
Because everyone is starting their budget process now. So.
And everybody needs or uses that base for their evaluator for their budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through the primary levies of the county. I do this every year when I do the budget presentation at the end, but sometimes I think it's valuable to hear it at the beginning also. The basic levy is on all property in the county, and it's maxed at $3.50 per thousand with a couple of differences there. You can levy additional, but there's a different process to do that.
Right.
So, in order to put a budget together, I just assume $3.50 per thousand for our levies.
These are the dollars that have the fewest strings attached. It can be spent where the county deems it's appropriate to spend these particular dollars.
As long as it's for general county services.
Right.
Correct. Once you set your levies in March, you set your levies in March. Period, end of conversation. You cannot change those if you have an emergency in September. Your levy is set. And general county services, for the codes, that is meant to principally, primarily benefit all residents of the county. The supplemental levy is also on all property. There are two supplemental levies. one for the general and one for the rural. We have never accessed the rural at this point in time. There is no max on that. However, it can be only accessed if the basic levy is insufficient to meet the needs and is limited by services. On one of the pages I gave you, I think, why not? The services that we provide out of the supplemental levy are the emergency management portion, what emergency management requests, we have used it to purchase voting machines. It's very specifically used to purchase voting machines. You can use it to pay for elections. You cannot use it to pay for the salaries of normal employees of the auditor's office that work elections, but any extra you can.
Traditionally, Story County has has moved items between general and supplemental as a way to manage the budget. So in years that there are more general dollars available, Story County has tended to shift more things up into the general fund that could appropriately be paid for in the supplemental fund. And on other years, we tend to do the opposite. We take everything that's appropriate in the supplemental fund and shift it into that and use the $3.50 in a more broad-based way.
Why would we bother to shift?
It depends on what the funds are looking like and what the balances look like.
So you're playing with the you're trying to keep a minimum in the balances. Is that what you're saying? I mean, otherwise, why wouldn't we pull the same type of item out of the fund year after, out of the same fund year after year?
Right. It's managing ending fund balances and trying to manage the overall levy rate. So you know you can't even do a supplemental until you get to $3.50
right.
in the general fund.
Right.
Right? So some years, if your balances are getting higher in the general fund, you want to be careful about growing that too much, but you got to get to 350 first,
mm-hmm.
right? You start
right.
there. And so there have been, I believe, reasonable rationale behind occasionally moving some things. Now, we tended to be going more in the other direction, where we're shifting more and more into the supplemental fund.
Right.
Where
okay.
appropriate. In fact, I can't even think of what we still have in the general fund that's appropriately paid out of supplemental. Do you have anything off the top of your head?
No. Because the supplemental, we pay for services provided in the juvenile court.
Mm-hmm.
So any juvenile court services
right.
that are eligible can be paid for there. That is only the care, not the actual allocation that the juvenile court does with,
got it.
With YSS.
Right.
We pay all employee benefits. That's one thing about benefits. If you're going to pay for whatever fund you're funded from, the general fund, which is where the majority of our funds come from,
mm-hmm.
for employees, then the benefits are all from the supplemental fund, which in the last couple of years has changed, because when we moved to health insurance, the health insurance is eligible to be paid for from the supplemental fund. The flex cash was not.
Okay.
So that was a substantial shift in how we fund health insurance.
So you're moving from the general fund some items that we might pay from the general fund, but we also can cover in supplemental, so that leaves more to pay for the items that we have to pay out of the general fund.
Correct.
That's
right. Correct, to the extent that the supplemental fund has a limit on what we can pay for out of it. So what I've done numerous times over the years is I've gone to the county attorney to sit down with me again to make sure that everything's covered, that we are paying things appropriately,
okay.
and that we aren't missing something. Okay. Now, the code still says that care of children and then juvenile in Toledo can be paid out of supplemental funds.
Right.
I mean, we haven't done that for some
years.
Right.
So the code is not necessarily always keeping up. So if it changes, then we review where we take things from and whether we can. Emergency management has been paid out of supplemental for as long as I can remember. Employee benefits, the tort liability insurance, property insurance, other insurance, workman's comp, all those types of employees insurance or insurance for the county is paid out of supplemental.
Right. So she gave us that list. And so I guess I was focused more on the fund balances than how they would weigh in. I mean, we've kept healthy fund balances, but right now, I mean, for this fiscal year so far, we're high on some of our fund balances in some categories, right? And so does how, when you make that decision, then do you decide to maybe take something out of the supplemental and move it back to the general so that you can go ahead and reduce the fund balance then?
That's not true. That's a conversation we can have.
Okay.
So that's a way, Morris, that you can lower your countywide levy rate.
Right.
Right? By moving something out of supplemental into the general. We're going to have the conversation as a board of, are any of our ending fund balances actually too high, or are there some dollars in there? And I'm thinking of the sale of the CLP building. I'm thinking of the $1.6 million from Energy Transfer Partners that is absolutely in our ending fund balance, but that those are monies that are already designated to go somewhere else. So how does that factor into what the reality of our ending fund balances are?
Thank you. Yes. Thanks for letting me.
Any further questions, please? Services
that
can come
out of supplemental fund. And the COP, when we shifted the funding from the mental health fund for that, we shifted it to the supplemental fund because we can't pay for a county run program out of the supplemental fund.
And we did that for a year until the transition was
complete. Right.
I think, Laura's because elections are very spiky. There's not, especially when we have a presidential election, our numbers go like this every year. We always have the conversation about what makes the best sense for the county, where we can pay for funds out of the supplemental or not. And even if we never change things, it's always worth having the conversation about what makes.
It's just a management tool that we can use to try to manage fund balances versus levy rates.
Okay.
Right?
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
The MHCS levy is on all property in the county. It's determined by the region. The pricing is still limited by the dollar amount of $3,066,575 for Story County. It's a by-county basis. Four per capita, which is $47.38 of the most recent population, as determined by the state. That calculation this year for us is $4,539.873, whichever is less. As this conversation is Glenn Blumenface, I will continue to have this conversation with Glenn Blumenface. I don't know why MHCS levy has to be determined differently than every other levy that we deal with. It should be based on valuations also.
We don't do anything as a county, or counties, plural, based on number of citizens. We do everything based on valuations of properties. And so this fictional number that they got out there of 4738 is ridiculous. Now, what's important, I believe, for us to keep in mind as supervisors is some inherent issues with mental health funding in Iowa, and ultimately what the county, and in particular Story County's responsibility is going to be to that. The reality for our region, and Deb, I'm going to speak in real generic terms, and Marty, you're our representative to this, so just take this based on where it is. I believe that our region right now is a $15 million a year entity, roughly. And they happen to have ending fund balances. Our port, we kicked in, what, $6 million over the last 3 years? Yeah, of ending fund balances. They've got such a healthy ending fund balance in excess of 100% of the $15 million. that they're utilizing those and charging the counties less right now. Don't expect that to continue. And the reality is, if you divide out $15 million based on valuation, based on population in the counties, our share is about $4.5 million. If you divide it out based on valuation in the 10-county region, our share is about $4.2 million. So don't get caught up in this $3,066,000 where it's been forever, or the $2 million that it is today. As we look at this, we better be giving ourselves flexibility and understanding that a $4 million day is coming. And it's coming fast, unless the state were to decide to take the whole program over. Unless something happens, we need to keep our eye on the ball of this. And Marty, you're our representative for this. We just need you to understand this backwards and forwards so that you can weigh in as we move through.
We do have the option, since we're not levying our maximum right now, we do have the option to talk about whether we want to levy a little bit more now.
I wish we did. I tried to do it, two years ago. I tried to levy a little more thinking that we could build a reserve to accommodate a rainy day, and the reality is our 28E explicitly states that we're not going to levy more than the region asked for. So it's a good idea.
All right, yeah.
A worthy approach, Laura.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Absolutely.
Throw the round file. Okay.
So I, as Rick pointed out, this is pretty, last year we talked about this, and if Hamilton County is one of our inner region, and their levy, however much per thousand, so if you live in Hamilton County, because quite frankly, this all gets converted to a levy rate, even though they're maximizing us on dollars,
right,
or asking for certain dollars, it's a levy rate when it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody living in Hamilton County, their levy rate is 55 cents, and ours is 25 cents.
Yeah, so I made the point regularly 2 years ago, $100,000 valuation in Franklin County paid $1.21 in, and $100,000 valuation in Marshall County paid 68 cents. Both in the same region, both have theoretically the same access to services that either one has, and yet one with the same value property is paying damn near twice as much for access to the same services. It's why the per cap method doesn't work when you try to lay it over what is county funding. It's valuation. And the reality is, property in Story County, of the 10-county region, property in Story County is going to tend to be valued a little bit higher, right? So we're going to kick in more. We are that $4.2 million of the $15 million, but the per cap method doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay.
Debt service levy is on all property in the county. It's based on the county voting debt obligation. So right now the county is paying for the refi of the bond we just did to pay off the secondary road bonds. We have
And debt has really fallen for the county. In terms of debt service, has really fallen for the county over the last 5 years.
So understand that the only thing that's in here is the voted debt service.
Right.
Not
urban renewal.
Not urban renewal, none of that, because that's coming out of TIF. Now, you can, as a board of supervisors, with a voted levy for things in the debt service if you want to.
So we can screw a balance.
You cannot accrue balance.
So we can't be, but the levy will follow
our debt. Over $600,000, you can levy debt service for us.
But if we had no debt, we have no levy.
Correct. So what I'm saying is, 2 years from now, the next conversation, that'll be zero.
Right.
Because we have no, our debt will be zero.
Right. Unless one of you guys has some kind of building or something that you want to build. Then we're going to have to send it out to voters and see what happens.
I've been having this conversation short recently.
Yeah, Taj Mahal of the animal control.
Yeah, right. I think that was your words.
Yeah. Okay, never mind.
The rural services levy is on all rural property in the county. The maximum for that is $3.95. It also has a supplemental, which is also limited by services. We don't access our supplemental. We're at $3.17 or such for rural-only properties. Understand that, you know, as a more urban county, our rural valuations are, I think it's 65% urban, 35% rural, whereas a lot of counties in the state of Iowa are 80-20 or 90-10.
We have less flexibility with our rural services fund than other counties as well. You want to talk about that for just a minute from 10 or 12 years ago?
I've got the actual...
That's a file.
It's just a lawsuit, right?
I've got the actual rural levy calculation that the court told us how we have to calculate our rural levy. And it's the very last page, I think, in your packet. So when the lawsuit was final, the ending result was that three heads got put together, none of which were mine or anybody that's even with the county or with the state anymore, and decided that you needed to prove local options or property tax relief. Now Rick will verify this. He's called, I think, everybody he can think of, and nobody approves property tax relief. Our attorneys have said, well, if you cannot make it, get appeal, then you need to approve property tax relief. So this calculation, on the left side is the actual maximum for levy, or the maximum is $3.95. Our rural district is $3.72.91. So the total we can access is $3,674.93. We can add in what can be paid from the rural supplemental, which in this case is 5.9% of salaries paid from rural services and secondary roads. Secondary roads is its own animal, but we can actually use them in the calculation here. So the total levy authority we have right now is $5,044,000. Okay? However, 60% of our loss, local option sales tax dollars, is for property tax relief. So if I take, and what I've done, we don't know what our local option sales tax dollars are going to be until we get over. I get an estimate in August of what it's going to be for the year. So what I've just started doing is a 5-year average will be actually brought in for local option sales tax, and that's the number I use. So we have to use $1.2 million for property tax relief. So that means the difference is $3,811 that we can actually levy in the supplemental fund if we want to. That brings us to a levy of $4.09, which is the $3.95 plus the supplemental.
Mm-hmm.
We do not access that. We do not. We have it in the past, and that's up for discussion, I guess.
Sure.
The rural fund is fairly limited in what you can pay for it from. It has to primarily benefit the citizens in the unincorporated areas. We pay for IRBM out of there. We pay for maintenance of the library contracts out of there, because the code says you have to pay for your library contracts out of the rural fund. And the sanitary disposal. Now, when the lawsuit actually, or when all the debt settled, we started paying for out of 40% of our lost sales tax dollars, we started paying for some of the things that are mandated to pay out of the rural fund, the libraries,
right.
Sanitary disposal.
Mm-hmm.
So we shifted those expenditures there, so they're paid out of 40%, which freed up some other dollars that we were able to pay for things out of the rural fund. The rural fund right now actually we pay for planning development, which is the board discretion. They can and cannot decide to pay for that out there.
The rural fund or this?
The rural fund pays for, yes, planning development is out of the rural fund.
Okay.
The animal control is out of the rural fund. And the sheriff's 18 patrol and 4 detectives, 22 employees are paid out of the rural fund. Only their salaries and benefits, nothing else.
Right.
Everything else, the sheriff's office, the clothing, the cars, everything else, no, cars, let me back that up. The clothing, the arming, the training, it's all paid out of the rural fund. We don't have a lot of departments that are actually primarily intended to benefit the underserved areas.
Yeah, so the biggest line item that we have that right now we're paying for out of loss, which is getting tighter and tighter every year, that could appropriately be paid out of the rural fund is libraries, right? That's a $300,000.
The libraries have to be paid out of the rural fund, and they are paid out of loss.
And we pay it out of loss, right?
Yeah. And this is that's another situation we analyze where our local sales tax dollars, how much that 40% is going to be as we're working through the budget. And the one thing that we have shifted back and forth numerous times is the vehicles to the sheriff's office. Anything that is rural patrol vehicles, we try to pay out of the rural fund and loss, out of the loss dollars. We don't always have enough loss dollars to bring that. So we have shifted back and forth, general and rural, depending on which fund we need to maintain a higher balance. The additional funds that we budget for but are not levied, and most of these funds are reported as special revenue on our final documents. Board by resolution can add funds that are for specific purposes and the balances remain to the purpose of that fund, payroll over. So if the auditor's office, for instance, we're paid out of the general fund, whatever we don't spend goes back to the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
The board paid out of the general fund, whatever you don't spend goes back to the general fund. That's the way it is. However, with the special revenue funds that are for a specific purpose, that is not the way it is. They stay in that fund and they are restricted for those purposes. The secondary road fund is the first one I list because I think a lot of people don't understand the funding formula for the secondary road fund and how that affects everything else. The secondary road fund is funded basically three primary ways, and that is property taxes from the rural fund, property taxes from the general fund, and state road use taxes. Those funds all go in the secondary road fund. It's a restricted fund. It can only be used for secondary road purposes. So the code also then goes on and gives us a maximum of what we can transfer from the rural fund and a maximum of what we can transfer from the general fund. I've listed those two maximums there. your budget book, I'll talk about that in a little bit, have that information in it. If you do not at least provide 75% of funding from your county taxes, then you lose dollar for dollar road use tax.
75% of the maximum that you're allowed to do. Which is kind of where we've been in Story County,
yeah,
doing what
we've been about 75%.
Right.
When they do the actual final breakdown at the end of or after the fiscal year is over, they also get to use the $260,000 that we pay out of the local option sales tax for any water grader. That's paid out of the rural fund, so they can use that for the 75%. And they can use all of our maintenance budget for the 75%. So even if we don't transfer exactly 75%, they have enough other tax-related revenues or tax-related costs that are levied that we need that 75%.
So coming back to how the loss relates to the Rural Services Fund, lost monies are in addition to whatever we can levy in rural services, correct?
Okay. But it has to offset. So
yeah, I understand.
Okay, you got that.
It has to add the 40%.
Yes,
correct.
So in essence, when we're paying for the motor grader out of loss or the libraries out of loss, we're doing it with that share that's there to provide property tax relief for rural services. Okay?
The TIF fund, that is funded by the revenues from tax increment finance districts currently in the wind turbines.
When are we at the max on the majority of the wind turbines? Is that this year?
Next year.
Next year. So if you guys, I don't know, Marty, if you followed it, Lawrence, I don't know if you remember. So what happened is the Board of Supervisors instituted an ordinance that actually I think we might want to consider the same kind of thing for solar energy if we're interested in solar energy. But we said to the electric companies, if you want to build a wind turbine, nothing for the first 3 years, nothing for the first, what was zero for 3 years. You pay no property taxes on the increase for 3 years, and then it ramps up 5% a year over 7 years. And then it's done. So 35% of the total value.
30?
35.
35. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So we're approaching that on 123 of our 160 now wind turbines. Okay, yeah, so somewhere north of 150 wind turbines, but 123 of them are approaching that maximum amount where we're not going to continue to see the growth in that area.
Is it related to a federal law about the 35%? We can only state, thank you. Okay.
Well, we were the first to institute the ramp up, right? Wasn't that aren't other counties modeling themselves after us on that? Yeah.
That's a state assessment.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
All the way through. So it wasn't our supervisors that did that back in, what was that, 2006 or 2007?
I don't think so. I think it was the state, the state, I thought federal, but that's above us.
Okay.
Above us. The powers that be.
So TIF debt is paid from that fund. And then the urban renewal projects that are voted or that are decided on, are paid from those funds after a transfer to the urban renewal project fund. And if you don't use all that 50%, it has to go back to the project. I just talked about the urban renewal project fund. Special law enforcement fund is the fund used by both the attorney and the sheriff for special projects. Funding for that comes from seized property. The REAP fund is a conservation fund. The county must file a report annually to prove that we spend at least 22 cents per thousand for conservation purposes. And then they get the REAP funding from the state.
22 cents per thousand of what? Of
evaluation.
What? Oh, evaluation. Okay, thank you.
And what we raise was going to be signed on a report, but it's what we usually work 70% or 80% or
90%.
We're way above
22. Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't know.
The employee wellness fund is funded by the task funds that are unused by flex employees. Which is dwindling, and we need to talk about that because the budget proposed to take to the annual grant either fund it with some general fund dollars also or something. The Recorder's Records Management Fund is part of the recording fees collected by the recorders and deposited here and is used for ongoing records management by the recorder. The Recorder is usually ran by Eagle, which is a Tyler-based real estate.
It'll integrate, so it'll push the recorded documents into our real estate program.
Oh.
And I think all the associated images as well.
Right.
So.
Right. So when we went to Tyler Real Estate 5, 6, whatever years ago, the recorded process happened at that point in time.
So we had systems that wouldn't talk to each other.
This will be a nice addition.
And let me just say, very kind of the recorder to pay for that out of what I consider to be the recorder's discretionary funds,
right,
rather than asking that we pay for that out of the general fund dollars.
Right. Commissary fund is based on the made up of dollars from the prisoners deposited in and used for benefit of prisoners. Right now, they pay for cable TV, books, pots and treats, things like that, out of that fund. The capital projects fund is used for the purchase, remodel, et cetera, of county buildings. Funding is usually from the general fund, which is tax dollars, but the dollars cannot be transferred until the project is started. Trust me, I have talked again to my state auditor about the fact that that's why we assign funds, we commit funds in the general fund, so that when there's a project that we know is going to be costly, we can transfer the funds to the capital projects fund from the assigned
in.
Correct. Do they define started as architectural site visits and whatever, or do we have to borrow against
the
general fund?
Okay. That's totally acceptable.
Okay.
So if the board makes a motion and decides to do a project, the animal control building is a prime example of that. That there's an RFP going out on that, and it's going to be a fairly large cost. Those funds will probably be transferred to the capital fund when the decision is made to go forward.
Right.
Thanks.
The Sheriff Reserve Officers Fund is deposits coming from reserve officer duties. The reserve officers are paid $1 a year for their service. However, they have a fund that is a county budgetary fund that is used for, like, they go to ISU football games to get overtime or get out of work or to contract somewhere. Any of the reserve officers that can be deposited in this fund and used for, they usually use this for an annual event that they have or things like that. The sheriff pretty much arms them and
challenges
them. No, challenge points, they have general fund.
Yeah. I learned something today.
But full uniforms and equipment we're paying for out of here for the reserve. Okay. So just what's here goes into whatever event they have. Okay.
The county attorney fine collection fund was big news a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the deposits come from the bond collection program is administered by the county attorney, but only after the threshold is met, and then only 40% is 60% collected. It's got a balance of I'll give you that information when we're talking to the county attorney. I should know all the balances off the top of my head. The capital projects TIF fund. I made a capital projects fund for just the board made by resolution a capital projects fund for just TIF. So it's used for TIF related projects that have been bonded for and paid for TIF revenues. We paid for Dayton Lake at this fund, we paid for ISU research parks, better meeting, Levis Street, back there, trail, anything that has been bonded for.
Right. If we paid it in the year, we haven't sent it through this fund. We've just paid it directly from TIF proceeds.
Um,
So the projects we do in smaller towns, the one-off projects that we do, do not flow through this. Right.
Conservation Acquisition Capital Projects Fund. This is a fairly new fund. It's only probably 5-6 years old. It's funded, so camping revenue was went into the general fund. And went toward the offset of the cost of conservation, basically. Conservation asked and the board agreed to deposit all of their camping revenue into this capital projects, conservation capital projects fund. It's actually just considered all of my reports as a general fund subsidiary.
Okay.
It's not a special revenue in the sense that some of the rest of these are, but the funds do stay there and the conservation things along that spend.
Sure. Okay.
Friends of Conservation is funded by revenues from the Black Slavery Estate Income, basically, which is farming revenues and donations to contribution for conservation. It is used for grant matches and for partners programming. And Friends of Animals funded by donations and used for the benefit of animals as determined by the animals and the people. Any questions about any of those?
Thank you.
The number of positions in the county departments and elected official departments are set by the Board of Supervisors. Okay, so that is the board's preference as the board sets the number of positions. Okay. Salaries and benefits are calculated by HR and monitor based on the number of positions in union contracts. Kudos to Elizabeth for helping me out this year because I always call my numbers that I put in for payroll today. Not that they're far off usually, but I didn't ask it, but she did a really excellent job of breaking it down by steps and by contract rates, all that kind of stuff. And so it was much easier to do. Hours.
Much less swaggy this year.
Still swag,
but much less
swag. You know, going into a budget, we all know that these are the number of positions, and this is what I'm budgeting for the positions, and then somebody leaves and then you too much. Well, then they don't.
Which the board has tried to deal with that the last 2 years by only budgeting 94% of what 100% would be on approved positions.
Correct. So the budget process is going to start with the individual department review. You're going to go through each budget. Each department's budget is submitted. The budget book is organized by department and information from the resource sessions subsequently presented by fund and service area. So what I'm saying here is that the budget in front of you that I just gave you is all by department. I think that's the best way to start. But when it gets down to all the numbers where we just do all the final documents, the county budget is by fund and by service area.
Right.
We cannot exceed a budget by service area when it's all said and done. So while I'm reviewing the budget throughout the year, if I see that you're getting close on service area, I will have to come to the but not by department. They don't have to do it by department, just by service area. Service areas really make sense when you look at them, and you'll see them in your book. You know, there's the law enforcement, well, the sheriff needs it, you're going to find it out of that one, or that area. There's the social services, asset, community services, VA, health, those types of things. There's county environment, then that's going to be conservation, that's going to be animal control, that's going to be PD, those types of things. There's roads and transportation, that's pretty obvious, that's the secondary roads department. There's general county services, which is where a lot of all of the facilities, you guys, have the most of the treasure.
Recorder.
No, the reporting documents. which is where the other part of you is and the other part of the treasurer is. So that's, you'll see it when we go through the budget that they're broken out that way, and it's for a reason.
It's where, so for the last 7 years, it's what's been most confusing to me. And so I encourage us just to take a minute to try to process what's happened here. So money is coming in certain funds. They can only be spent in those funds. And then we go through and we build a budget by department or office. And then all of that is pulled together to come out to produce this final budget that's by service area. So it's speaking three different languages as you build this thing, and they all have to come together.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't mean.
Exactly.
So one thing that has been confusing to some people is the fact that we focus on expenditures. That's where the mechanics between service areas and expenditures. We have the expenditures. The revenues are very important to us, but there are no ramifications if we go over on revenues or go under on revenues. It's irrelevant. But they're important to us when we're putting the budget together because, there's funds coming in. We need to be able to offset with our tax bills.
So very clearly, our role as supervisors budgetarily, what we do on the expenditure side is much more important than anything that happens on the revenue side, except if you're trying to look longer term and think about how we're going to sustain this thing long term without any dramatic changes going forward, you better make sure, I've made no big secret that I'm a proponent of making sure that our expected revenues meet or exceed our expected expenditures for any 1 year, right, for operational purposes. We're not required to do that. We just aren't. And there are cases where I can see where you would not need to do that. But what it does to any board of supervisors who does not keep those two things in mind is it limits your ability to react to unforeseen circumstances. That is why I believe it's so important to keep in mind, even though the revenues are not, we aren't bound by as much on law on revenues. They tell us where they can come from and in most cases how much or what we can utilize to pull in the revenues. Please keep in mind trying to get those things somewhere related, simply because it keeps us from getting into situations that a lot of counties, including Story, got into 10 or 12 years ago where it was really tough trying to make ends meet.
The policy, the financial policy, and supervisors has passed. I think the wording is something that will not substantially
Yeah, it doesn't say we won't dip into fund balances to make ends meet. It says we won't use substantial. What the previous board, me and Paul and Wayne, tried to do is we tried to go one step further than that and say, no, we were going to try to meet that on an operational basis year in and year out. In fact, we've been successful at that the last few years.
And I thought this would be the case.
It's not.
This year because of the fact that we have some fund balances that we need to use.
Well, we have fund balances that need to be utilized, but we have some projects that have now been budgeted in a couple years that finally look like they're going to get done. I'm thinking of secondary roads building. We're talking about animal control. You know, there's some things that are going to happen that may not make it practical this year. It doesn't mean we should lose sight of it.
The budget is submitted to the paper for publication. It goes to 10 to 28 before the public hearing. And the budget that is submitted for publication cannot be greater than the final certified budget, but it can be lower.
Yeah, and so let's just make sure we underscore that. When we get to the third week in February and we get our final swipe at whatever we're doing, it's important if we're going to miss at that point that we miss high rather than low, because we can always come in here on March 14th and lower something. But if we make a mistake the other way, we don't have the ability to rectify it at that point.
Lisa, can you explain then how budget amendments work once we set that March 14th or 15th amount? Are we able, though, to come in later and do it via an amendment?
Okay, so after July 1st, when the budget goes into effect, yes, we can amend the budget. As I stated earlier, you can't ask for more tax dollars or anything like that. You can't do anything with your levies.
Right.
But we can amend dollars, and it happens.
Every year, it will happen every year. And you can base that on a couple of things, Loris. You can either do it out of actuals, right, how it's actually going,
right,
which is what the Board of Supervisors primarily did the last few years. You can also do it with your fund balances. If some kind of an emergency comes up and you need to respond to it, you have the ability to do that mid-year.
Well, and actually, didn't we in this last year, as an example, started out at $40 million, but then when the TIF money was approved for the ISU Research Park, there was a fund balance amendment, right? Or, I mean, it was
there
was an amendment, and we went up to $42 million for the budget, right?
Same thing for Dakin's Lake
four
or 5 years ago.
Right.
And part of that amendment, the first amendment for this fiscal year was also on the 12th, before the end of June, and it didn't. And in order to pay for that,
So we had that built in for last year and then had to shift it forward. And we're going to have that again this year. We're going to have some road projects that we've got budgeted in this year. We're going to have some things we're going to have to shift forward.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that I was using the correct terms for and what was actually going on. Thank you.
Yeah, Lisa, try to avoid if this has to happen. It's what it is.
I understand.
We have to publish those also on the papers, and it costs us money to publish them.
Well, we try to limit how many times we do it during the year, right? Haven't you got it down to three or four times a year that we kind of funnel everything to?
I try really hard to.
Okay.
Early in the fall, and then at the end of the year. You have to do your budget amendment before May 30th, because you have to
give
30 days for abuse.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
So,
and Lisa is very good about sending out a memo to all department heads, elected officials, like, this is, I'm putting together the final budget amendment for some mid-May.
Yeah.
And then,
well,
we have a really good idea what's happening.
Oh my God.
Right.
No, what's really been impressive for me over the last few years is watching how close Lisa and our department heads are to hitting the mark, where when we get to May, we have a pretty reasonable idea of where we're going to end that fiscal year. And it is an outstanding management tool, Loris, that allows us to make those immediate changes that we need to make going into every new fiscal year.
Thank you.
So I put this common unknown information on here just because I think it's common unknown information. I don't think people understand coming into county government, period. The assessors are their own taxing authorities governed by the conference boards. Our office is a fiscal agent, so we pay all the bills and we do all of the
payroll.
But we have absolutely no say in anything.
Except we're one of three votes. The three of us constitute one vote on the conference board for both of our assessors.
Yeah, so nothing we levy in the county budget is for the purpose of the assessors. E911 is made up of the commission and does not levy any taxes, nor receive county tax dollars.
We better keep an eye on this one over the next couple of years, because technology-wise, there are going to be some major expenditures that need to flow through E911, and we're about the only place that can they can fund them.
So what you just said, Rick, versus they don't receive any county tax dollars. So we are going to have to take other dollars to fund E-911 improvements.
So E-911, originally when E-911 started, they got a lot of tax, or they got a lot of dollars from $1 surcharge on every phone line in the county.
Per month.
Okay. Per month.
But now people don't have phone lines.
Landlines.
Right.
Yeah.
So those revenues have been shrinking.
Yeah, but it goes to the state and then it's split up. It didn't make it to the county.
So cell phones, they get the $1. But it goes to the state, and the state distributes it how they do.
Which very little gets back to the county.
I don't even know what their calculations are or what they need to do.
Right.
But then when they need to upgrade their equipment, and they go to the state and say, help us, they say, oh, sorry, we don't have any money.
Yeah, and that's where...
I'm all of this, so I don't know why they don't have any money.
That's where I believe there will be an ask of the county to purchase new equipment.
Got it. So right now it doesn't receive tax dollars.
Yeah.
Operational tax.
No.
Right.
Operational. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, just to
clarify, but we will get an ask, probably. I understand.
Well, the last time this came up, I don't know, you just started.
Yep.
And they were talking about increasing. I mean, we had to go through the whole process of bonding or whatever, because it's over, most of the share of our head was over $600,000.
Way over
$600,000. So we really had to do debt service to do it. Or,
right, that's tight. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
The emergency management has a commission. You know, their house downstairs, they have a commission, but it does not have levy authority. I've been here 21 years, and I got out of those 21 years, there have been at least 8 attempts to get them levy authority via legislation. Okay? The last attempt, they thought they did it, but they didn't. So it's listed on our certification of taxes as a sub underneath supplemental or general, whichever we're looking for. But it is not levy.
Yeah, and I think there's only two ways the emergency management can be funded as we currently are, and that is every municipality can kick in, which we don't do, or the county can include it appropriately as part of their supplemental levy, which is what we currently do.
What we currently do.
Okay.
85% of their funding does come from county tax dollars, one way or the other, general or supplemental. The department itself is overseen by the commission, and the auditor is once again the fiscal agent. Now, they have their requested amount is in your budget because they have prepared their budget and brought it to their commission. I think their hearing is January 17th, if I remember correctly. I do their budget audit. I mean, they give me the numbers I prepare online for them.
And so that commission is made up of the mayor of every municipality in Story County, one board of supervisor member, and the sheriff.
And all of the townships in the county, there are 16 of them, have their own levy authority and certify their own budgets to the auditor by March 15th. The townships levy for fire, emergency services, and cemeteries. So that means that the townships use their evaluations.
Owned cemeteries aren't limited, but everything else is limited.
Everything else is limited for statute.
That must be difficult for them too, to provide those limited
services. They can carry fund balances. Most of them do, and you will see that they will levy for years, maybe 10 years, and then buy a new fire truck, and they will sort of accrue those balances to make big purchases. They don't have any debt service authority.
Lucy has put together a township meeting. It's an annual meeting that we have with all the township clerks and trustees of all towns.
February 15th.
In this room.
I'll send out the agenda.
And the townships that participate get a lot out of it. I think it's a great program that Lucy runs for them. My concern is those townships that don't participate and what kind of carrot, if any, we can hang out there to encourage participation, and is it worth us doing that? I just want that to be a conversation that we have probably when we get to our portion of the budget in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Despite the turnout that you're talking about, every township clerk has interaction with our office. Mm-hmm. They come in, they have us do their budget, put their budget together for them. I mean, we give them the numbers, they decide, they have their meeting, but the forms are all under the auditor's purview. So we actually usually sit down with every clerk, one of us, or the four of us sit down with every clerk and talk to them. Uh-huh. So they know what they're doing. There's a township manual that the ISO extension has put together. It's very helpful to them, and they all seem to like it. And you can refer to it.
I know I've been to two for certain, possibly three of them. Well worth the time and the questions that are asked. I was right in the cemeteries last year.
Yeah.
There's cemeteries are this topic again this year.
Is it? Oh, good. Okay.
Since it's a big part of what I do.
Budget 101. Are there questions you guys understand somewhat what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good job.
That's entirely new. What a great job that is.
Yeah, great job of it.
All right, so now let's get to the actual meeting.
So the projections that I put together are totally and entirely based on just what we know right now. It's not anything in stone. It's not anything that we're going to, necessarily, it may look nothing like this when it's finally adopted. I'm looking at preliminary projections right here.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said earlier, the revenues matter. So when we're going through budgets, we're going to re-estimate revenues, we're going to re-estimate expenses. That doesn't mean I'm amending the budget for those at this point. It means I'm re-estimating what we're actually going to be doing the end of the year. So starting with the actual FY16 up there on the main funds. As you can see, our generalized unaccounting is 30%. Our MHCS, well, the MHCS fund is supposed to be able to still have 200% of what our mental health expenditures are. So, right in the $600,000, $700,000 fund balance is where.
Yeah, we're spending just over $300,000 locally.
Right, right.
And that's because of the staff, right? It's our own personal rather than what we're turning over to the region.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
The rural fund came in at 19% and the secondary roads came in at 67% for 16. With the numbers that all the departments have requested and re-estimated themselves, which they're not done re-estimating, right now because I'm going to make them re-estimate some more. The general fund for FY17, we're going to have about 28% this way. Supplemental about 39%. MHC about 23%. Rural about 18%. And secondary roads about 74%.
So the two that are absolutely high there are mental health and secondary roads. Mental health is an interesting issue, why it's high and how we rectify that, and I don't know that it's simple. Secondary roads has more to do, I believe, with carryover project. The fact that we've got $375 budgeted this year for a secondary roads building that's not going to get built in this year. I mean, there's more stuff.
It's actually almost $2 million to spend on, to spend on projects that this year, and we estimate that way down.
Yep.
I mean, why was re-estimation lower?
Down because they're not going to happen. They're not going to get done in this fiscal year.
In the $2.5 million construction, and he estimated that down to $600,000.
Wow, that's a lot.
A lot of money in there for construction.
So, and that's why, even though the rural fund's at 18%, which is a little lower than the 25% usual target, nobody's worried because we're so high with secondary roads then? Or is
no,
that,
because
no?
If the money's been moved over secondary roads,
it's in tech secondary. So then we're back to that's just what's left in rural fund. Okay.
It's nested there. It can't come back. Nope.
Thank you. Okay.
Let me talk about that.
Right.
Yeah.
That comment about the 18%.
Yes.
The rural fund. So when we look at what our new fund balance goals are, we look at what the expenses coming out of those funds are and what revenues coming into those funds are. Our general and supplemental only get tax. The majority of their funds is tax revenues. So September, first three months, mm-hmm. we need to be able to operate.
Right.
So that's why 25% is vitally important to me in that.
Okay.
The supplemental fund is where we pay for our insurance premium, $300,000 right off the bat in July.
And we're just trying to build a little reserve there for the insurance fund that resides in that.
Right. So that fund, at least 25%, is comfortable there. The rural fund has monthly local option sales tax of how much? $200,000.
Right. A little under that, yeah.
$200,000. So it's got some other revenue streams that we can access to get us through the first three
right.
months. So I don't. And I think we've focused on 15 to 18% to budget for that fund because.
But it's simply a cash flow issue, right? The fact that we don't collect property taxes July, August, September, right, means we better make sure that those funds that completely rely on those that don't have any other payments coming in, that we have enough there to be able to cash flow until the other dollars come in. And it's the reason that the rural fund, I believe the rural fund more like 15 to 18% is pretty reasonable. General fund 25% or just under is reasonable. Supplemental, especially what we're doing with insurance now, definitely higher than 25%, probably more like 32 to get comfortable. That's where I'd like to see us shooting for. And we actually look pretty good right now. Like I said, with the exception of mental health, I've got issues trying to figure we don't need to carry that much in mental health, but we don't have as much control over that anymore. And secondary roads, really digging in and figuring out how much of this is just based on projects that are occurring but moving slower than we expect them to move, and how much of it is we're budgeting dollars that we never really had an opportunity to spend. We got to dig in and figure that out because the 74% is too high. Oh, no.
Okay, thank you.
We'll talk about, with the request, and I didn't put this on the sheet at this point in time because from now until the end of the work sessions, it changes so much. Mm-hmm. We're the general fund right now. With the request the way they said the FY18 ending fund balance was to be about 23%. Now that's excluding the assigned and the committed funds. I mean the balance that we're looking at is $7.7 million, but there's a little over $3 million of that sitting there that is already set aside for other projects, for other things.
And that's what we talked about as we were starting today.
Right.
Okay.
The supplemental is only at 20%. The ending fund balance, well, like I said, we is at 105% in all health funds, so we have issues there for sure. Rural fund is only at 12. And secondary road fund is at about 31%. So the main funds.
Right. Which is true every year, right? We're not looking at anything a whole lot different this year, but we've got some work to do.
So I gave you in the middle, or the next portion there is the dollars that can be accessed based on the levies, based on the valuations. On the right, I gave you what we are currently at for FY17 and how many dollars those are bringing in, and where we're looking to be in 18 and how many dollars that are bringing in. The supplemental fund, I'm putting a number in there at this point in time. The next page you have tells you how much it costs for salaries and benefits from each fund. So, for instance, the general fund, there's $10 million of salaries in general fund. There's $3.4 million worth of supplemental funds and payroll. So if you just look at the, for sure, this is what we're going to pay for out of those two funds, then the lending of 3.7 means that we are only letting that $300,000 extra and supplemental fund is any other revenues besides tax dollars. And all I did there was leave it the same as last year, 3.7, just for conversation's sake.
Yeah, I think we're going to want to look at that right out of the gate.
We'll probably have to.
At a minimum, keeping the supplemental where it is now and probably going up just a little bit. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and as you can see, you know, that was 89 cents last year, and it's 86 cents this year.
Right.
90 and 87 if you want to round up. County mental health fund, I did not know what to do with because I have no idea. I think that did Carla tell me that they're going to be deciding that in January?
Yeah.
What the recommendation is going to be for the counties. I looked at what it currently is this year just for comparison's sake. Obviously, if they ask for more money, then that levy goes up. If they ask for less money, the levy goes down. Debt service, that levy is totally and entirely what we need. So it at least has $50,000 in income balance in that fund, which is just for purposes of making sure we can pay for any bodies. So that goes down to 17.9 cents. The rural services, I love that levy the same for discussion purposes at this point in time. Obviously, no decisions are made about what we're going to do with that one. But because the valuation went up,
which is amazing.
Yeah, I know. The dollar amount, you know, is about $200,000 more for me than last year's amount.
You better not expect it to go up next year. It's going down.
So, overall, the valuations. The countywide went up 3.7%. That usually is 5 to 6% when I'm talking to you guys the very first time.
Right.
And the rural went up 3.8%, which is more than the countywide, which blew my mind.
Right.
And no, I don't expect that. The valuations in the
we'll get equalized up. Next year.
Yeah, we'll get equalized next year, so that will definitely change. And the city's key management, you know?
Right.
The more medications there are, the less rural.
It's amazing that it grew.
Yeah. It is amazing that it grew.
Yeah. So as you look at these on the revenue side, right, we don't get to impact the general basic.
Right.
We do get to impact the general supplemental, and I think we need to have a hard conversation about what we're doing there. Mm-hmm. We don't get to impact the mental health. That comes to us from the region. We don't get to impact debt service. And we can have some impact on where we go with rural.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two areas you guys need to be looking at and thinking about and getting creative on.
As we sit right now, the revenue projections, I listed what the taxes and miscellaneous were for the actual funds that we're, you know, talking about the majority of the time, what the total revenues that they bring in, and then what the expense requests are as we sit. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. That's a little bit different when we get done.
Yep.
Now, I did give you what the maximum transfer to secondary roads from the general fund and from the rural fund can be. And what 75% of those is. I think I built in right at 75% right now in the budget, and that's obviously something discussed from year to year.
Right, but even with that 75% built in, I just think it's important to note, right now, first blush of the budget, we're looking at 38.5 in revenues and 40.5 in expenditures. We've got work to do, probably a little on both sides to get there, and then we've got to talk about secondary roads funding. Is the traditional 75% of max that we've been kicking in, is it the right amount, especially when you start to consider the 74% ending fund balance that we got there? We're just going to need to talk all the way through those as we get going.
Excuse me, what else do I have to do? Do you have any questions? You look at your budget books, do you know what they have for you? Look at it.
I'm going to analyze it with you. I have looked at it myself. I said, work in progress.
We're going to take our time. We're going to take our time in every work session. We're going to go through line by line, if you guys want to go through line by line. I actually am in favor of going through anywhere we have questions, but we're probably going to at least start out with our first couple work sessions going even beyond that, where even if we don't have questions, we're going to stop and talk about things as you guys get more and more comfortable with what this is. We're not in any hurry to get this done. We schedule ourselves plenty of time to get it done. If you have a question, it's a good question. Ask it. We got to get where we got to get. And these are important conversations. Absolutely.
If we know our questions in advance, so we've gone through whoever we're going, you know, gone through in advance to look at each section that day, do you want us to shoot out the questions in advance, or we'll just take care of them here at the board table?
I would prefer that you not, because, and my rationale, and Lord, we can go any direction, but my rationale there is, I want our conversations to be a little more organic. I want whoever's presenting to us to give us their presentation. They may answer three of your questions right out of the gate, and then if you have a question, rather than you giving it ahead of time, I would prefer Marty and I get to hear it right here at the same time, and we get to talk it through.
I agree also, but I wasn't sure what staff preference was.
I think that you will find, they told many of the staff, many of the people have said to me that, oh, is it your work?
The first couple years, the first couple years that we went through kind of this newer process of doing it, or I guess newer questions.
Newer
questions. There was real trepidation. But I'll remind all you guys, the second we get to a point that we ask a question that they aren't prepared or for whatever reason can't answer, we do a callback, we have them come back in a week or 10 days, and we get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I like everybody hearing the same thing at the same time too. But okay, that sounds good.
So page one of your budget is the overview, and page three is the position. The overview is we put it together with basic items that were in the budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is some general information on the second page. Just since I have familiar with some of the overall things that are happening.
I highlighted and wrote.
The positions are what the current budget is and the requested for next year. There are no requests for next year at this point in time.
Okay.
For what I can do. Nobody can deal with us, so we're assuming there's no requests.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to put on what the rate comes on and what the cost is. Unless there's some questions about it, we don't really talk a lot about the salary line items when it comes to budget work sessions. As I said earlier, you guys are the ones that determine how many positions there are, and funding is put in their budget.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a lot of questions and discussions about salaries. If you have questions about salaries, please ask them about what you do to make sure that it's charged to that point.
And then we'll, Deb and Alyssa be with us for all of these sessions also, so they're going to be questions in this. Okay.
Yeah, you can count on Deb, Melissa, and Lucy to be here along with Lisa. Just to help us through the process, make sure we're getting covered what we need to have covered to make the decisions we need to make. Let's see. While you mentioned salaries, what the board, previous board, has committed to our elected officials and department heads that we're going to have to discuss is a commitment from this board that if we have an approved position set at a salary rate, that the board will fund the actual cost of that position for the year. That's where we get back to, you heard me say 94% earlier, at least 100% right. What happens is, so we get 240 and a half approved full-time positions, which, by the way, it bugs me that we got 240 and a half approved full-time positions. I know that it's GIS. I understand that part of it's going to, but it's not an approved full-time position if it's half a position.
Right.
But
it is a full-time position. You only
fund half of it. Absolutely. So we got those approved positions, but the reality is, in those 240, you do have turnover every year. I just ran the numbers, and I think we got 142 of those 240 employees that were with us in 2010 that are still with us today. But that means over the course of those years, we've had turnover in 100 of those positions. And it happens during the year, and you end up with some time that you're not fully funding 100% of the positions. And what had been happening is the board had been budgeting 100% of positions every year, and we ended up with a swag item in our salary budgets, which really wasn't a problem most places, but it was a potential issue in a couple places, and so we decided to budget more closely to actuals, but with the commitment that whatever the actual ends up being, even if it's beyond what we budget, we're going to fund it.
The use of the term swag, as I've sat in here over the years,
yep.
All right, I'm trying to clarify
Sure. What
exactly you're meaning, because I've heard it used in a couple ways. I've heard it used as a placeholder, just, you know, to Sure. Say we don't know what this is going to cost. We want to make sure that we have an allocation or we've made allowances for it. And then what you just talked about as swag is it sounds like there's money left over. So that's what I'm hearing in my head from this last explanation, is that you head into the last analysis of the last 3 months and you've got my money left over that we've over budgeted, and so there's an amount we won't be using for the budget.
Sure. And I define swag as a number that has flexibility built in it. And in that context, you're 100% right in how Lisa described swag early on. We plug a number in the budget. Mental health right now is a swag number because we don't know exactly what it's going to be, but we need something to hold it. What I utilized it as on the back end was we had this swag where there were dollars that were budgeted for one specific area, but it all of a sudden became available to be used in a bunch of different areas.
Right.
And just the flexibility there. And I believe that a good solid budgeting says, no, the dollars that we budget, should, especially when it comes to payroll, should go to payroll. And if they don't, we need to not be budgeting because we can sure be using them other places.
I got you. Okay. So the term to me means what people get at the Golden Globe Awards. The Academy. That's not what we're talking about.
You get out your thesaurus and you can come up with a different word, we'll start using a different word.
I just want to make sure that I'm understanding then what the term is.
And I gave everybody a sheet that I just put together, and it just compares levy rates between the 10 largest counties. So for me, Dallas County is the 10th largest county in the state at about 80,000 people and growing really quickly. Number 11, I think, is Clinton County, and I think they're 50,000. It's a huge gap. And so it's reasonable to me that as we look at these things, we think about what's going on in the 10 counties, the 10 larger counties in the state. And so I just put together their kind of the levy history for you of what's been happening in the last few years in each of those 10 counties. It's not something that's vital that we know, but I think it's a good thing if we have some awareness of what else is happening in counties similar to ours. Anything else for us? Okay, we're together at 9 a.m. Monday morning. We're going to talk about capital improvements, and we're going to talk about outreach. Is that right? Anything else for us? Thank you, everybody.
I like divorce, but any budget is a point in time. So it's our best guess at that point in time. This is how I always understand. When Lisa says, I swagged it, it's like, that's what she, based on all the evidence we have today, that's what we're going to use the number, but that can change.
Sure, the biggest swag we ever did was when we were moving to health insurance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We had no idea.
We didn't know who was going to take health insurance. We didn't, you know. And so you got to figure out a way to get a reasonable placeholder in there.